Penguin Random House Audio presents Turn the Ship Around, a true story of turning followers into leaders. Written and read by L. David Marquet.
Forward by Stephen R. Covey. I had the opportunity to ride the USS Santa Fe during Captain Marquet's command tour and observed firsthand the impact of his leadership approach. It had a profound impact on what I thought possible in terms of empowered and engaged workplaces. I had been training U.S. Navy officers in leadership during the dot-com era when I started hearing about something really special happening on a submarine in Hawaii. When an opportunity arose to ride the Santa Fe, I jumped at it. I embarked on Captain Marquet's submarine to see what the buzz was about. Never before had I observed such empowerment. We stood on the bridge of this multi-billion-dollar nuclear submarine in the crystal-clear waters off Lahaina, Maui, moving silently along the surface of the water. Shortly after getting underway, a young officer approached the captain and said, "Sir, I intend to take the ship down 400 feet." Captain Marquet asked about the sonar contacts and bottom depth, and then instructed this young man to give us another few minutes on the bridge before carrying out his intention. Throughout the day, people approached the captain intending to do this or to do that. The captain would sometimes ask a question or two and then say, "Very well." He reserved only the tip of the iceberg type decisions for his confirmation. The great mass of the iceberg, the other 95% of the decisions, were being made without any involvement or confirmation by the captain whatsoever. Wherever I went on the submarine, the control room, the torpedo room, even the galley where they were preparing lunch, I witnessed a dispersed intensity of operations I hadn't expected. The crew was amazingly involved, and there was a constant low-level chatter of sharing information. I can't say I actually saw the captain give an order. I asked David how he achieved this turnabout. He said he wanted to empower his people as far as he possibly could within the Navy's confines, and maybe a little bit more. There was a mischievous twinkle in his eye when he told me that. He felt if he required them to own the problem and the solution to it, they would begin to view themselves as a vitally important link in the chain of command. He created a culture where those sailors had a real sense of adding value. But that answer only makes clear his objective, not what it actually takes from the top man in the organization and everyone else to accomplish this. How do you create such an organization? What does it take? The answer is in this program. What I love about this program, first of all, this is a great story, one of self-discovery, tension, and the lonely self-doubts of the leader who sets off on an unknown path. We know now that Captain Marquet's experiment on the Santa Fe was wildly successful, but at the time, neither he nor the courageous crew who embraced this new way of running an organization knew if it would work. Second, the book provides the specific mechanisms they used on the Santa Fe to achieve the transformation. We learn what they did, how the crew reacted, good or bad, and how the mechanisms matured with time. The good news is that these mechanisms are about how we interact as people and are universally applicable. You can apply them in your organization, business, school, government, and family. Third, the book presents a comprehensive paradigm shift for how we think about leadership. Captain Marquet has coined the phrase leader-leader to differentiate it from the leader-follower approach that traditional leadership models have espoused. I think that laying out this distinction in such opposing terms is a good idea. Having personally witnessed how the Santa Fe operated, I can attest that this new way is not a nuanced modification of how we are doing business now. It is fundamentally different, and that is where its power lies. Why you want to listen to this program? No matter where you are in your company's organization chart, you'll want to listen to this program. People at the top will learn how they can release the passion, intellect, and energy of those below them. They may be unwittingly behaving and taking actions that work against those goals. People on the front lines will also find ways to embrace decision-making and make it easier for bosses to let go of control. We are in the middle of one of the most profound shifts in human history, where the primary work of mankind is moving from the industrial age of control to the knowledge worker age of release. As Albert Einstein said, the significant problems we face cannot be solved at the same level of thinking we were when we created them. They certainly won't be solved by one person, even, and especially, the one at the top. Our world's bright future will be built by people who have discovered that leadership is the enabling art. It is the art of releasing human talent and potential. You may be able to buy a person's back with a paycheck, position, or power, or fear, but a human being's genius, passion, loyalty, and tenacious creativity are volunteered only. The world's greatest problems will be solved by passionate, unleashed volunteers. My definition of leadership is this. Leadership is communicating to people their worth and potential so clearly that they are inspired to see it in themselves. I don't know of a finer model of this kind of empowering leadership than Captain Marquez, and in the pages that follow, you will find a model for your pathway. Remember, leadership is a choice, not a position. I wish you well in your voyage. Stephen R. Covey, Spring 2012. Introduction. People are frustrated. Most of us are ready to give it our all when we start a job. We are usually full of ideas for ways to do things better. We eagerly offer our whole intellectual capacity, only to be told that it's not our job, that it's been tried before, or that we shouldn't rock the boat. Initiative is viewed with skepticism. Our suggestions are ignored. We are told to follow instructions. Our work is reduced to following a set of prescriptions. Our creativity and innovations go unappreciated. Eventually, we stop trying and just toe the line. With resignation, we get by. Too often, that's where the story of our work life ends. Even the most promising employees can go through this downward evolutionary spiral. Take Ian, for example, who should have been viewed as a model employee by the multi-billion-dollar communications company that hired him. Instead, his first corporate employment experience was so disheartening, he swore never to return. He's now an entrepreneur. When I asked Ian what went wrong, he told me, "I could complete my day's work in 2 hours. I asked for more, and I was met with, 'In time, young man.' I had no decision-making power." And this from a company that has a reputation for thoughtful leadership and innovative products. Ian quit and found a more satisfying way to spend his time. You know, sure, maybe over time things would have improved. But who wants to gamble their career, no, their life energy, on the hope of a sea change at an established, successful company? I went on to pursue my dreams, and I've done so. If you have felt the urge to follow Ian's example, you are not alone. Worker satisfaction in America is at an all-time low. Worker engagement and commitment to their employers is also at a low. As of November 2011, unemployment had been at 9% for 31 months. You'd think that everybody who had a job would be happy just to have one, but that is not the case. This deliberate disengagement is costing billions in lost productivity. Disengaged, dissatisfied, uncommitted employees erode an organization's bottom line while breaking the spirits of their colleagues. Gallup estimates that within the U.S. workforce, this cost is more than $300 billion in lost productivity alone. As large as the cost is in lost productivity, my sense is that it is dwarfed by the cost of lost joy and happiness. Bosses are frustrated as well. If you are a boss, you have likely been stymied by the lack of passion and ownership you see among your workforce. You probably have tried to encourage them to make decisions, only to have many seem more comfortable simply doing what they are told. Empowerment programs start well, but don't sustain themselves. New workers come into the organization straight from school, expecting to be given prescriptions for how to do their work. This situation exists in even the best companies. For example, Dr. Scott Mesh is CEO of Los Niños, a company dedicated to assisting with the educational development of special needs children.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?